At Farm to Table, we know how confusing healthcare is. We're here to simplify the healing process. We believe that healthcare should be simple. It should help people feel better. That's why we started the Table Talk podcast, to gather around the table with you, no matter where you are. We want to come and learn together and discuss a new healthcare approach that addresses the root cause of your symptoms. The journey for each person is unique, but together we can thrive. All right. Well, welcome to today's episode of the Table Talk podcast. And today we have a special guest with us. So we have Dr. Lindsay Elmore with us today. So thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Elmore is also a doctor of pharmacy, and she is a speaker, author, and world-renowned wellness expert. She translates complicated science into understandable stories and travels the world educating audiences about natural wellness. She obtained her undergraduate degree in chemistry from the University of Alabama at Birmingham, and a doctorate in pharmacy from the University of California, San Francisco. She has a similar background to me, actually, which will lead into how we met, but she did her first year postdoc residency in pharmacy practice at Princeton Baptist Medical Center in Birmingham, Alabama, and she did a second year specialty in ambulatory care in North Carolina at New Hanover Regional Medical Center. So Dr. Elmore and I first connected over kombucha in Las Vegas, and we were sitting there at actually a American Society of Health System Pharmacy committee meeting. I'm helping to plan, I think it was like the educational steering committee, right? We're helping plan content for that committee and for that conference. So we were both involved there from our ambulatory care background. And for those patients listening, ambulatory care just means people that are in a clinic or outpatient setting, but mainly focused on the management of chronic disease. Since then, we both have had sort of an enlightening or more awakening to the healthcare system and just really how conventional medicine leaves our patients frustrated and confused and not getting answers. And often we have to dive a little bit deeper into actually being able to help them with their health conditions. So today our topic is actually focused on the gut-brain axis, because Dr. Elmore is actually joining us on our FX Med CE platform, which is functionalmedicineCE.com, where we educate other practitioners. Our focus is pharmacists, but we also have opportunity for other providers to join us. And we dig deep into some of these root causes that we talk about a lot. So I thought, since that was coming up, and we do have some other clinicians that listen to our podcast, and I know this information is so important to get out there to whoever wants to listen and hear it. So Dr. Elmore and I are going to talk a little bit today about that gut-brain axis. Her presentation is talking specifically about the microbiome connection. So why don't you just kick it off with anything else you want to introduce yourself, what you're up to now, and then just let us know how this like gut connects to our wellness and our mental wellness as far as like anxiety, depression, mood disorders.
Well, the gut is absolutely critically important for the function of our mental well-being. We don't really think about the enteric nervous system, which is a collection of 100 million nerve cells that really operate independently from the brain. But this enteric nervous system does a lot to influence a person's state of mental health. And it's this connection between the enteric, so enteric means gut, alongside the central nervous system that is a part of the gut-brain axis. So the gut-brain axis is where this enteric nervous system and the brain communicate with each other, which controls not only our digestion and our gastrointestinal processes, but it also links our cognitive and emotional centers in the brain with our GI mechanisms. And it's so intricately woven together that we actually have it hard-coded into our language, where we'll talk about having butterflies in the stomach, or some people will experience anxiety as a churning in the stomach, or some people will experience depression as craving comfort foods or losing their appetite entirely. We also know that some people will process stress when they're under pressure by what they eat and how they choose to relate to that anxiety on this like gut level. We also know that anxiety, depression, mental health disorders can really affect our bowel functioned. And so many people consider irritable bowel syndrome to be a gut disorder at its very, very core. And when we ignore the gut, it causes our gut cells to kind of open up and separate from one another, which further exposes us to chemical constituents in the food that can cause anxiety. When we have the leaky gut, we may be exposing ourselves to more allergens and antigens that can cause us to feel like we've got anxiety or depression or just mood fluctuations. Stress is obviously the Ouroboros of all medicine, you know?
We talk about stress every single time we get on this podcast.
I know, it's so true. And you know, in functional medicine, we talk about the 8 root causes of disease. Mm-hmm. And the first one that tees them all off is stress. And stress, I believe, is arguably the root cause of all disease. And it's not just psychological stress, but it's the physical stress that we come up under. It is the emotional stress that we experience on the regular. And it's just the stress of going through life in this modern world. And so the gut health and our mental health are intricately connected through the gut-brain axis, which is mediated in multiple ways. We certainly have the physical connection of the gut and the brain via the vagus nerve. We have the immune system, which sends chemical messengers like cytokines and interleukins back and forth between our gut and our brain. And then we also have the neurochemical connection, the neurotransmitter connection between our serotonin, our dopamine, and the hormones that we have like cortisol and estrogen, testosterone. It's all talking to each other. And it's not just the gut and the brain talking. It's the gut and everything. The gut is communicating with every single body system all of the time, conveying information about the health and well-being of us.
Right, right. It's so amazingly complex. I think like we used to think just, oh, digestion, that's all this gut does. And then we find out it connects our, you know, those pathways to the brain and our mood. And then we find out it does endocrine signaling and helps with metabolic processes and stimulate the further, you know, storage and insulin release and all these things. And it's like, man, like we should be taking better care of our guts, because now we're in a society where we get antibiotics for every little thing, and the stress impacts our microbiome, and so much impacts the diversity that's left there. And unfortunately, as our generation is passing it to the next generation, we're, you know, passing this like not good microbiome, this less diverse microbiome. So we definitely have to work hard. I think we have to work hard to maintain the diversity that we have in our gut, and also to prevent, you know, further changes to it. So let's talk a little bit about that microbiome. So do we know that like certain bugs help with mood, or certain bugs like make worse someone's risk for some of these mental health conditions like anxiety and depression?
Yeah, absolutely. So we know that it goes both ways. So we know that stress and depression can alter the gut microbiome, and an altered gut microbiome can cause stress and depression. So it goes both ways. Both the disease process makes the gut worse, and when the gut gets worse, it makes the disease process worse as well. Now, we do know that there are certain strains of bacteria that can work on the hormonal and neurochemical and neuroinflammatory pathways that can lead to anxiety, stress, depression, bipolar disorder, whatever. And so when we think about some of these bacterial strains, number one, we need to, as clinicians and as clients, we need to be asking very specific questions about which bacteria am I actually taking? And this is something called strain specificity. And so strain specificity is how we look at what is this exact bacteria doing? Not its cousin, not its great uncle. And you think about this like dogs, right? So all dogs are the same species, right? They're all canine specialis or whatever they are. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. But all dogs, dachshunds and huskies, they have the same genus and the same species. And it simply comes down to the expression of their exact phenotype that is different than the genotype, okay? Same thing with bacteria. We can craft Lactobacillus acidophilus, but we can craft it in so many different phenotypes that it does different things depending on what is the strain specificity. So if you're at your local grocery store or if you're considering a probiotic supplement, we do want to look for the string of numbers that comes after the genus and the species of the bacteria. So we want to drill down and be really specific. And so some of the bacteria that have some evidence as far as working on what I guess we classically think of as the most important neurotransmitters and hormones that relate to mood disorders. You know, I think we have seen some evolution, especially in the past 3 months, about the concept that depression is solely a serotonin problem, because let's be honest, of course it's not. Of course it's not. Nothing in the body is solely responsible for one bad outcome, right? Right. It's all interconnected. And so, but when we kind of think about mood disorders, we think serotonin, we think dopamine, we think cortisol. If you're even a little bit more well-versed, you might be talking about GABA. And we also know that we need to soothe the inflammation in the brain. So one of the bacteria that has some evidence is Lactobacillus rhamnosus R0011. And this particular probiotic helps to lower our cortisol exposure. And so it's about, you know, in pharmacist speak, this is about taking the area under the curve throughout the day down and just mitigating that cortisol exposure. This particular bacteria also improves GABA neurotransmission, and GABA is the primary relaxatory neurotransmitter that we have. This is kind of the secret sauce for staying calm, and it's almost like a tonic to the vagus nerve as well. So when we're soothing the vagus nerve, we're also soothing the gut. And so Lactobacillus rhamnosus R0011, there's Bifidobacterium longum R0175 that helps people to stay calm, and it helps to decrease anxiety indices so that you're not feeling as anxious throughout the day. And this one also improves cognitive function. And so that brings up the potential for bacteria in the microbiome to be helpful in managing any kind of attention problems. There have been bacteria specifically studied for ADD, ADHD, because they can calm and focus the mind. And another one is Lactobacillus helveticus, the R0052 strain. This one not only increases serotonin, but it also decreases our nervous system inflammation. Emerging research in the past just 10 years or so has shown that I think we used to be very dogmatic about, like, bacteria must be alive, they must be probiotics. But now we know that what were originally called ghost probiotics, or probiotics that had died because of either age or from heat treatment, we know that these bacteria still can maintain some of their efficacy. So you're beginning to see an emergence of some postbiotics that can come in. One that comes to mind is Bifidobacterium lactis, the BPL1 version. And so one of the common symptoms of anxiety and depression can be difficulty maintaining a healthy body weight. And when we have unhealthy body weight, where we're carrying too much weight around the midsection, it's very pro-inflammatory for the gut, which becomes very pro-inflammatory for the brain. So we see that we can use some postbiotics to help reduce belly fat. One more probiotic that I will mention that works on both the belly level as well as the brain level is Lactobacillus plantarum DR7. And this one not only helps to increase dopamine, but it also helps with belly bloat and inflammation so that we're able to tackle this gut-brain axis from both sides of the equation.
That's awesome. Two strains that you mentioned, there's actually a clinical study in a product that we often use that looks at emotional wellness in patients taking that Lactobacillus helvetica 52, the R52, and the Bifidobacterium longum R175 that did a placebo-controlled trial. And they actually did it for 30 days and they saw improvement in their physical symptoms and their gastrointestinal symptoms. They had like a survey that looked at their feeling blue symptoms as far as like some of the depression symptoms. And then they also looked at irritability. And it improved all of those things. So it was like 50% versus about 25 to 30% in the placebo group. So a difference of about 25% versus those who took placebo. So it's definitely exciting to see more and more research in this area and these in those different interventions, especially when we, you know, in the healthcare system and the standard system, they'll call it treatment-resistant depression. And they'll say, oh, well, you none of these drugs are working for you, or people have a lot of side effects to a lot of the antidepressant, anti-anxiety medications. They might have gastrointestinal side effects because of the effect on serotonin. They might have sexual side effects as far as not able to perform. And they might also, you know, have headaches or weight gain, depending on what hormones that it's targeting. And so if there's ways that we can, you know, work with the microbiome to modulate these hormones without having such a significant side effect profile, this is really where I think it's exciting that we're doing research.
Well, and it's not just the side effect profile, but when I think about conventional antidepressant drugs like the SSRIs, the SNRIs, and the atypical antidepressants, and then the tricyclic antidepressants, they're based on this concept that holding serotonin or norepinephrine in the synapse of the neuron is what will help depression. Mm-hmm. But my concern is in people who have had longstanding depression, or especially longstanding depression alongside an addiction, they don't have any serotonin and dopamine and norepinephrine to begin with. Right. And so like we're not even giving the body a fighting chance for the meds to work. And right. So, you know, we in functional medicine, we delay meds as long as possible, but medication is sometimes inevitable. But if you're going to use a medication, at least take the steps to mitigate the risk and give the medications a fighting chance to work. So if you're going to take an SSRI, have an amino acid on board, because if you don't have any tryptophan in your body, you're not going to be building serotonin. You know, right. If we need to have our building blocks in place, as well as all of the various minerals that it takes to serve as cofactors in the enzyme production of serotonin and dopamine. We also need to take a really hard look at the fact that nobody is talking about the nutrient depletions that can Absolutely. Result from the use of antidepressants. And so we need to be taking B vitamin supplements, because if you don't have enough B vitamins, you're not going to be feeling that great. And I mean, we think of B vitamins as being a mood elevator, but pyridoxine, vitamin B6, participates in more enzyme functions than any other vitamin in the body. If you don't have it, your body is simply grinding to a halt. And as you mentioned, you know, and I will add on, you know, you mentioned the struggles with sexual performance, with, you know, just the drugs just not being that effective in a lot of people. But mm-hmm. we also see a very broad range of weight loss to weight gain. And mm-hmm. it really has to be discussed before initiating these medications. You know, you look at a drug like paroxetine, you could easily be putting on 20, 25 pounds, which can sure. worsen the depression as well as worsen the gut microbiome. And so if we're going to use meds, let's at least give them the chance to work. And let's also take steps to mitigate the nutrient depletions that are going to inevitably happen on the other end, especially in someone who already has leaky gut. Because, you know, at the five R's of how to heal leaky gut, one of the things is we've got to replenish what has been lost. All of these dietary enzymes, vitamins, minerals that because of the gut just being unable to hold them into circulation, they just pass through to the bowels. And so it's an interesting thing. The other thing I like about using the microbiome to modulate these neurotransmitters is at the opposite end of the meds not working is the meds working too well, which mm-hmm. can result in something called serotonin syndrome. And serotonin syndrome is very rare, but if it happens, it's bad because most of the time, it's really bad. It can be life-threatening. And you look at a drug like fluoxetine that you can really dose that drug once a week. We actually did some pharmacokinetic research to investigate if you could actually dose that drug once a month because it has active metabolites that just stick around for hours and days and days and weeks. If you are using your microbiome to modulate cortisol and serotonin and dopamine, you're not going to throw yourself into these super therapeutic states like medications can. And that's because the microbiome is adaptogenic. It adapts to what we need in that moment. And so you're not going to throw yourself into a cortisol storm from using your microbiome like you might from an overdose of hydrocortisone.
Yeah, that's a great point. When I used to staff retail pharmacy to pay off my extensive school loans on the weekends, I would get so many of those alerts like potential serotonin syndrome, because you've got not only these medications, but you've also got some pain medications like tramadol and other medications that can increase serotonin, even some antibiotics that might affect the increase of serotonin. So it's definitely one of these things that I think the healthcare system's like, oh, that's not going to happen. But when it does, like you said, it's really scary and can be life-threatening. And so certainly we're not saying at any point in this that people shouldn't use medications like these if you need them, if you absolutely are in a crisis situation and your provider and you come to the conclusion that this is the best course of therapy. We're just suggesting that there are other ways that can be looked at and modulate. And like Lindsay said, the nutrient depletion component is huge because some people just the nutrient depletions alone, correcting that, even if that's just part of the root cause of why they have depression, can make a big difference. And even like magnesium, we talk a lot about on the podcast, but from an anxiety perspective, magnesium is such a good calming nutrient and mineral. And it's involved just like B6 involved in hundreds and thousands of processes in the body. So it's a great first start to just really help the calming. There's even a product called Calm and it's a magnesium powder. So they use the mechanism to even brand that. So moving over to anxiety a little bit, I wanted to talk about the connection between yeast and yeast overgrowth, candida. We talked a little bit about the bacteria piece of the microbiome, but candida is a fungus, which is a form of yeast. So a very small amount lives all the way through our intestines. So, I mean, everybody's got some kind of candida. Challenge is when that goes unchecked. So if we don't have certain strains, especially lactobacillus strains in our gut, then the candida can get bigger and more population than it should. And so it does aid in digestion and absorption, but it also, if it gets overpopulated, it's able to multiply sort of unchecked. And then it actually has the ability to suppress your ability to produce or secrete serotonin. And so this is really where we can get into some of these increased risk of anxiety when the actual bugs are suppressing our production of some of these neurotransmitters, like Lindsay talked about. And so I do see a lot of patients with candida overgrowth. They have irritability. They also have some moodiness, anxiety, sometimes brain fog. And sometimes it's easier to identify because they might have, you know, a coated tongue, or they might have a lot of bloating or other digestive symptoms. They might even have a frequent vaginal yeast infections. And so I see a lot of allergies and seasonal sinusitis type things with yeast patients as well. But definitely something to think about when you're talking about mood disorders and trying to sort of uncover that root cause.
You and I have talked a lot about small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, but I mean, there's small intestinal yeast overgrowth, fungal overgrowth, all of the things. And in talking on my, I talked on my podcast with a researcher, Norm Robillard, And he really thinks that a lot of gastrointestinal disorders, especially the heartburn and GERD, which mm-hmm. can also be very anxiety-inducing, is caused from the production of gas, from all of this overgrowth in mm-hmm. in the small intestine and throughout the GI tract, you know, as a whole. But yes, we do know that yeast can also be associated, and Candida is part of our microbiome. I think that's important to note. It's not just bacteria in our microbiome, but yeast, fungus, virus, mites are a part of the microbiome as well. And so Candida is a yeast, which is also a fungus. And as you mentioned, we all have Candida all around us, but it's when we take antibiotics, which kills off our good bacteria, which allows the Candida to grow. When we have a diet that's high in sugar or in sugary beverages, including alcohol, oral contraceptives increase the amount of Candida. Having diabetes, especially uncontrolled diabetes, mm-hmm. can worsen Candida overgrowth. Really high stress levels. I mean, I'm telling you guys, stress is everything. And if there's anything wrong with the immune system, that can also lead to this Candida overgrowth. And you mentioned thrush, genital infections, yes. Also urinary tract infections, mm-hmm. sinus infections. Even skin infections like ringworm, athlete's foot, all of that can be caused by Candida overgrowth. Going back to magnesium, I mean, magnesium is such an amazing supplement, and I really think it gets underutilized because when you measure serum levels of magnesium, it's not an adequate reflection of your magnesium stores, right? Because most magnesium is intracellular. But we know that magnesium deficiency is a common side effect of Candida overgrowth. So Candida is now eating up all of your magnesium. And now you have a lack of magnesium, which means that your body's cardiovascular system is going to get amped up, which can cause anxiety. And magnesium is a tonic. It's a soothing agent throughout the nervous system and the cardiovascular system. And so we have to look at correcting both. And you know, you mentioned the connection to anxiety and depression, but Candida has also been linked to some of the more kind of generic day-to-day, like brain fog and difficulty mm-hmm. concentrating, you know, loss of memory. Right. But it's also been associated with more severe mental illness like schizophrenia, a severe bipolar disorder, ADHD, et cetera. On the one hand, it's sad because a lot of people don't know that they have Candida infections or Candida overgrowth. Tons of people don't know that it's linked to mental health. But the good news is Candida is pretty easily starved out. If we can get our diet cleaned up, which is going to do wonders for your mental health. I mean, the amount of data about just how disruptive sugar is for our mental health is profound. And we can starve out this Candida by eliminating sugar, refined carbohydrates, all the deadly whites, the white flour, white sugar, you know, and focusing on getting rid of sugary beverages, alcohol. It's just a matter of, can you eat fewer carbs and less inflammatory carbs, like, you know, things that are high in lactose. And, you know, I think the emerging evidence that we have that fructose is really at the root cause of everything, you know,
liver. We just talked about this last night in a webinar I did, and the number one cause of fatty liver in the United States, which is ultimately what every person with type 2 diabetes has, is fructose. Mm-hmm. And so we know it, but yet we're consuming it. It's in all of our food supply. It's crazy.
Well, and you know, it's very cutting edge, but the way that fructose comes in and causes these subclinical elevations in uric acid levels. Mm-hmm. And I think most of us, when we think of uric acid, we think of gout, but that's like rip-roaring.
Really high.
Really high.
The flood of uric acid.
Yes, but these subclinical levels of uric acid are outright poisonous to our cardiovascular system, to our liver, as you mentioned. And you know, in the United States, we have glamorized the consumption of meat that clearly has metabolic disease, right? You mentioned fatty infiltrates into the liver. But you look at like Wagyu steak or Kobe steak, where you can see the marbling all throughout mm-hmm. the meat. That is literally metabolic disease that you are just consuming in your life. And when we have metabolic disease, we have higher incidences of depression and anxiety and lack of focus and brain fog and difficulty mm-hmm. sleeping and all the things.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I see a lot of, like you mentioned, the candida overgrowth in my patients with metabolic disease, since that's been my focus area for most of my career. And I think the hard part for me, like certainly the diet changes are absolutely the best option first and foremost. And then also we pull in some herbs and things, but the diagnostic piece is difficult with yeast because we don't have, I mean, Dr. Pimental and the Cedars-Sinai, people are studying SIBO and SIFO, and there's great tests for testing some of the gases that are produced from the bacteria, but not as much. There's not much commercially available to test for yeast overgrowth in the small intestine. And so then we're sort of limited on looking at antibodies in the blood and also looking at physical symptoms. Like we talked about a lot of physical symptoms, and then a stool test, but the stool test is looking more at what's coming out of your body in the colon and the rectum. And sometimes it doesn't show up on culture, and sometimes it does. And, you know, there's different ways that we can stool test. I'm not going to go into all of that right now, but I just think it's a little bit hard sometimes to show people like this is the cause because that diagnostic piece isn't there. But I think when people start doing these changes, start using some of the targeted supplementations as part of a 5R protocol, which we've talked a little bit about on the podcast before, which is that remove, and the first step of removing is removing these inflammatory foods that are contributing to your imbalance in bacteria, whether that's yeast, imbalance of microbiome, whether that's yeast or bacteria, mm-hmm. and then also potentially using herbal products. And sometimes we use drugs. I use nystatin pretty frequently to help people with this as well when I'm in a collaborative practice agreement and can prescribe that. So, I mean, I always talk about, and I recently put this in my license plate, but like thriving, like so many people are dealing with these symptoms and just dealing with it. They're like, oh, this is how I am. I can't focus. Or this is, you know, what my life looks like. And they don't really think that there's a better way on the other end. And mm-hmm. so they're like just going through motions and saying, oh, I'm just surviving. And in reality, like we're all built to thrive. We're thriving to thrive in our community, to thrive in our jobs, thrive in our health. And so it's sad to me to see sort of the state of health where we are with a lot of patients. But I don't know if you want to mention anything along those lines.
I like to call it languishing. You know, yeah. We're just kind of just languishing, going through the motions. But we have the opportunity to go from languishing to flourishing. Right. And exactly. That's what we want to be doing. And it's, you know, it's not just about the microbiome. It's not just about like, you know, taking some supplements, but it's about truly being radical enough to take care of yourself, because nobody's doing it. Nobody's out there is taking care of themselves. And so to actually step up and take care of yourself is a radical act of self-love. Yeah. And so, I mean, listen, you can listen to podcasts all day long. And we can debate about what foods to eat, which ones not to eat, when to eat them, how to exercise, all of the things. But I think the bottom line is, can you take ownership of your stress levels, the toxins, including, you know, toxic people that you allow around you? Can you actually avoid the foods that you know to be allergenic and inflammatory for you? Because nobody's denying that sugar is delicious. Nobody's denying that gluten is delicious, no. But it's causing problems for us, you know? And so if we're, and are you willing to go to sleep at night? Can you just go to bed at night? I mean, we have so glamorized insomnia in this country. I mean, it's crazy to me that I don't know the statistics off the top of my head, but I'm sure it would be staggering to look up just how many American adults require medication to go to mm-hmm. sleep at night, when if we really worked on our circadian rhythms and all of the things, we could get this calm, centered state back. I think also you can't go through an anxiety, depression focus lecture without mentioning the importance of controlling our breath. If we can mm-hmm. learn to do that, we are going to be light years ahead of where we are, because it's all in the breath. It's all in being able to control sympathetic input and output and convert over to parasympathetic if we truly want to stay calm throughout the day.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Finding that time to spend. And we talk a lot. We talked on our last podcast we recorded actually as well about box breathing and doing that, you know, pushing the breath out and holding it there and then pulling it back in and holding it there and slowly increasing the time increments that you can do that. But that's been like studied to lower cortisol. And, you know, people are using it at the Mayo Clinic. You can find it on the Mayo Clinic's like website. And so I think you're absolutely right to be able to get all of this together. I mean, certainly the microbiome has one piece that we talked about, but so much of it is looking at the whole picture. And that's why we as functional medicine practitioners are talking about all this, because the conventional system is saying, here, take this pill, it's going to make you better. But unfortunately, they don't have the training that we've discovered since we went to school, I think, then that's one of the challenges. They don't have some of this picture of what's going on and how all these things connected. And the system is so siloed. Mm-hmm. You go to the psychiatrist and then you go to your internal medicine doctor and then you go to your kidney doctor and then you go to your cardiologist. And it's like, just what you're talking about before reminded me of that, because like the cardio symptoms, oftentimes we spend like $1 million workup on somebody to palpitations when it's like related to other things going on in their body and some of the stress. And certainly we want to rule out, I think, the challenges with the liability situation in the country. Everyone wants to rule out every possible negative thing that could ever happen to you. So they spend, you know, all this money in the ER doing all these evaluations on things that don't pan out because they don't want to miss anything, right, which is valid, but especially given the situation that we're in. But it's just frustrating. I think the ownership of health and people, I love taking care of people in this type of clinical setting, as far as like our farm to table team and even the practices that I work with, because people are there because they want to be well. And it definitely, you can see why there's so much burnout in the healthcare system, because there's so many people out there that don't want to be well and don't want to put the effort. Like you said, we need to actually own that. And so that's really important. So any last thoughts on mental health and microbiome things you want to share?
I just want to remind everybody that everyone deserves to be healthy. And so go out there and do that radical self-love and actually just stay healthy.
Yes, yes. And Lindsay, where can they find you?
So you can find me at lindsayelmore.com. You can also check out my functional medicine subscription website at wellnessmadesimple.us. And then I'm at Lindsay Elmore and at Dr. Lindsay Elmore across all social media platforms.
Awesome. Thank you. And for those listening, also, we are about to launch our 14-day reset, which includes so many things we just talked about, which includes the breathing, getting movement, includes pulling out some of those inflammatory foods, and for just like committing to a really 2-week period, doing the breathing, doing the better sleep, going to bed on time. And I'm going to have to be on that myself. I'm bad about staying up late. So I'm committing to that too. And so I want you guys to join us. And so if you're listening, you can head over to detox.farmtotable.life, LIFE, and check that out. And we hope that you can join us. Our kickoff call is actually coming up on November 6th. So thanks again, Lindsay, for joining me today. I really appreciate it. So fun to be able to talk to you again, and look forward to our next conversation.
Always a joy. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We're excited you are on your journey with us. Find us online at farmtotable.life, farm with a P, and on Instagram at farmtotableteam.